This weekend's big movie, The Last Samurai, features sweeping scenery, a lost cause, and Tom Cruise getting in touch with his inner warrior. But if you were one of the several million who went to see this sword and sushi epic over the past couple of days, you may have come out wondering what the real history is behind Japanese storied warrior class and their demise in the 19th century. It's unsurprising that many modern martial arts are a legacy of the samurai, but so are more gentle Japanese customs, like flower arrangement and the tea ceremony. If you have questions about who the samurai were and what their influence, cultural and military, was, give us a phone call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And if you've experienced any of the arts passed down from the samurai, we'd especially like to hear from you. You can also send us email at totn@npr.org. This month's National Geographic has an in-depth article on the samurai, and with us now in the studio is its author, Tom O'Neill, and good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, Tom.
Thanks.
First of all, for those who skipped the Octoplex over the weekend, can you compress the 700 years of the samurai controlled Japan down into a thumbnail for us?
Well, they were the ruling class for almost 700 years, from late 12th century to middle 19th century, and they dominated like warlords, almost like warlords we see in Afghanistan and Iraq now. They had their fiefdoms, they had private armies of men. Samurai means those who serve, and they became rulers just through military force, and they start off as bow and arrow masters, went to the sword, and by 1600s the gun had come in, and so probably more samurai were killed by guns than swords. But they had huge civil wars, 16th century. In the last 200 years of the samurai period, there was no war. It was a very totalitarian nation, and most of these men, bred for war, and their descendants became idle aristocrats, bureaucrats, bodyguards, so forth. So they've had a very complicated history. They're not one-dimensional action figures, and they changed like Japan changed through time, but they lived by a code of honor. They fought to win.
So that part of the image we may get from a Kurosawa movie or something like that, that part seems to be right, the code of honor?
Yes, that part, yes, they were brave warriors, but some of the greatest battles were won by treachery, betrayals, fakery, ruses. So it's a little bit mythic to see them as always being the good guys. They wanted to win, and they fought by any means, I think.
I was on the road this weekend, so I didn't get to the movie theaters, and I'm sure the Tom Cruise picture is perfectly accurate, but why don't you tell us what happened to them in the end?
Well, the samurai, when William Perry came with his warships into the Japanese harbor in the 1850s...
The famous black ships.
Yes, the famous black ships. Japan hadn't seen hardly any foreigners for 200 years. They had sealed their country. And just their arrival through this tremor of doubt and fear, through this culture that hadn't really had anyone to fight, and it set off this huge debate about should they modernize, and I think they started to make trade pacts, and some of the samurai rebelled. They wanted no foreigners. They assassinated tradespeople coming in, foreign diplomats, and the movie is about the last holdouts, and they weren't necessarily good guys. They wanted to keep Japan in a very feudal, class-ridden, kind of a cruel dog-eat-dog world, and they come off as noble warriors, but they wanted to keep Japan the deep past. But they did lose to modern weapons, American, French, and English, trained the new Japanese soldiers, many of them ex-samurai. Mm-hmm. Samurai numbered about 2 million men, only 6% of the population, but they ruled with an iron sword.
Now, I guess like the American cowboy, the Japanese samurai has become something of a cultural export. Any ambiguity in Japan about that kind of an image?
Well, when we went with for National Geographic, we expected to see this kind of worship, but no, there's a lot of ambivalence there. People love the martial arts. They love these battle reenactments, but the samurai stand for winning wars, for a violent solution, the Japanese are uncomfortable with that, and I think their constitution is pacifistic. They're now debating whether to send troops to Iraq, and I think there's a big generation gap going on. But you see the samurai on the kabuki stage, on the movie theaters, advertising. It is like the cowboy. It's one of their great iconic figures. And when you see this screaming samurai face with a top knot saying, "Don't jaywalk!" You know, they use that. They still use that image for all kinds of more peaceful activities.
Joining us now from the studios of member station WLRN in Miami, Florida, is a man who's translated many samurai texts. William Scott Wilson joins us, and it's good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
The texts that you translate are some of the seminal ideas of Bushido, and I hope I'm not mangling that pronunciation too badly. This was the guiding philosophy for the samurai. What are the main elements of this particular way?
Well, it's pretty broad. I think you have to look first at the word itself, Bushido, and look at the Chinese characters. Bu is the word for martial, and it's made up of the characters for stop and spear. So to stop with a spear, to stop the spear. Shi is it's the Chinese idea of a gentleman, the man who is both martial and literary, very cultural. And Do is a way, you know, we know it now in the Chinese sense of Dao, but it shows a head with action, so it's a thinking way of living. So you have a way of both the martial and the ethical and the cultural.
And it's a fairly complicated and complex. I've been reading one of your translations. This is the Hagakure, the Book of the Samurai, by Yamamoto Tsunetomo. And this, fairly deep in the book, he said, if there is one way to say in a word what the condition of being a samurai is, its basis lies firstly in seriously devoting one's body and soul to his master. And if one was asked what to do beyond this, it would be to fit oneself inwardly with intelligence, humanity, and courage. And he goes on to talk about all those three traits. It doesn't say a lot about sword fighting. It doesn't say a lot about combat.
Well, Tsunetomo had never been in a battle, for starters, but he had an emphasis on death, I guess you could say. It wasn't really necessary to win the battle for him. His most famous line is, "The way of the samurai is found in death. When it comes to a matter of either or, there is only the quick choice of death." And what he meant by this was, again, you don't have to gain the goal. You just go in and you show your sincerity and you die. And the other half of that is that if you die inwardly, if you die to yourself or put yourself out of the picture altogether, there's nothing that you can't do. Mm. Once you are mentally dead or you've given yourself over to death, you can do anything.
Is the primary motivation honor or avoidance of shame?
Well, where do you draw the line between those two? You know, I think we all know that avoidance of shame is a big thing in Japanese culture, but I think honor is it's very important. But more than that, I think you have to go beyond those two and look at sincerity. Sincerity is the value, I think, that he puts most emphasis on.
We're speaking about samurais with Tom O'Neill of National Geographic and William Scott Wilson, who's among whose books is Hagakure, the Book of the Samurai. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And an email question we have from William Babcock in North Little Rock, Arkansas. He writes, during the Second World War, the Japanese War Department tried to bring back some form of the samurai's lifestyle and beliefs. How close were they to it? Tom?
Well, the famous word kamikaze came from the samurai war with the Mongols in the 13th century. And in that way, they did, like Mr. Wilson said, they promoted fighting to the death, even suicidal. And I think just making this kind of militant love of your country, I guess, was samurai-like. But in a military, it's not obviously a class organization, I think it was hard to bring the samurai, which were privileged people. They could, they had the laws all in their favor, so I think it was a little bit different. I do think just making Japan dominant was samurai-like, but it's still my story. The geographic story points out there's a great ambivalence about the samurai past. And one college kid I saw in front of this beautiful set of armor in a museum, he looked at it, he knew all about the wear, all the valor of the battle, and he said, you know, my generation just isn't into endeavor like this. And I think that's where, maybe during World War II, they preached this effort and sacrifice and so forth. But now, I think that part of their past, they're having a hard time. And I wonder what they're going to do with that samurai spirit. I think they used it for the economy somewhat. But I think a lot of Japanese are wondering, what do we do with this this strongness, this strength, and yeah, I found the Japanese a little bit adrift. They don't want all of the samurai, but I think they want that kind of pride and sense of victory back.
What, William Scott Wilson, what about the more philosophical and cultural and artistic aspects of the samurai? Those were presumably left out in the propaganda efforts of the Second World War.
I don't know that they were, but it certainly is important. Again, this goes back to Chinese and Chinese characters, which is a translator I guess I'm most interested in. There's a character that's pronounced Uruwashi in Japanese, and it's made up of the characters for bun on the one side, which is literature or culture, and bu on the other, which is the martial. This is the Bushido.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideal man was to be able to balance both. In fact, the character means balanced or beautiful, as I said, I think. And does this exist today? I'm not so sure it does, but you know, the martial arts are very popular over there. There are a lot of people who study kendo, the bamboo sword fighting, and karate, and iaido, which is drawing of the sword, aikido. These are very popular. And at the same time, tea, the study of the tea ceremony, and calligraphy, and even poetry is still very, very important.
Let's get a caller involved. This is Michael, who's on the line from Roscoe, Illinois.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
I apologize for my voice this morning. I had a question regarding whether I forgot the topic of the conversation, whether the samurai were related at all to the modern-day Yakuza that we see in Japan.
The gangsters, I've seen those pictures too. Tom, any thoughts on that?
Not really. I know that the Yakuza style themselves as if they were samurai. I mean, they carry around swords along with their automatic weapons, and they like the deference and the hierarchy of that, similar to the samurai clan. But no, I mean, their swords are cheap there, and I don't think they have much honor going on for them, and they're very corrupt and so forth. And I think one thing to point out, samurai in the last 200 years were not rich anymore. In fact, a movie I saw when I was there, The Twilight Samurai, had what was more realistic. A samurai had to sell his sword to pay for the funeral of his wife, and a lot of them were reduced to growing crops, making bird cages, and so forth. And I can't believe the Yakuza would want to do that. And plus, Mr. Wilson would probably agree, the samurai were very modest in their world, according to Bushido. The Yakuza, no, they want these big processions of their limos going down the streets, and they want to make money. The samurai was beneath them to make money.
We just have 30 seconds or so left, Mr. Wilson, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think that only in the sense of the lower echelons of the Yakuza serving. You know, if samurai means, it comes from the old verb saburao, which means to serve or to be an attendant. Certainly, I agree with Mr. O'Neill on all those points, but when you think of these lower echelons serving their bosses, there's a certain element of samurai spirit there, I think, but it stops there.
William Scott Wilson, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
William Scott Wilson is a translator of many samurai texts, including the Book of Five Rings and Hagakure. He joined us from the studios of member station WLRN in Miami, here in Studio 3A. Tom O'Neill from National Geographic. His article, Samurai, Japan's Way of the Warrior, is in this month. This is NPR News.